James, in a similar sense that no one can figure out whether Jason Bateman is the most attractive, average-looking guy or the most average-looking, attractive guy, I can't tell if that Rangers-Penguins series was the closest, like, demolition or the farthest away close series. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think the sensation you're trying to describe is the one I felt last year after the New York Rangers bowed out to the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah, yeah, almost the same thing, where it's like, I don't know if this was a close blowaway or a blowout close series.
Well, it wasn't at all, but I mean, you know, much like the last year's Stanley Cup final, the only thing stopping it from being a blowout was a goaltender. And I will say, Marc-Andre Fleury had the Rangers in fits. I mean, there's a reason they only won. Each of their wins only came 2-1, right?
Isn't it so nice to be done with the Marc-Andre Fleury sucks in the playoffs storyline?
Well, then we're talking about
done with that.
Well, then we're talking about the rest of the Penguins sucking ass in the playoffs. I mean, mind you, Malkin had to be hurt. I think I don't know exactly if they came out with anything about that. I've been kind of a little bit out of the Twitter feed.
Seen anything yet? But that's, I don't think I've heard anyone that I respect in hockey say anything except he's definitely hurt.
Yeah, because he was a shadow of himself in that series. Well, you know, this said, I viewed this, and you know, I'm knocking on wood here, as kind of a warm up, a prelude to the real dance for the Rangers. This was getting your legs wet, getting your feet wet in the playoffs before you draw the real tough team, which is going to be Washington or the Islanders. And as a Rangers fan, you know, I'm a little worried about that. You know,
worried about the Islanders.
Either one. I mean, I had said this earlier. Washington, you know, the whole storyline as well. You know, they're going to prove this year is different. It's completely different. They're not going to choke, even though, of course, they're going to a game seven as they have seven of the previous nine series. I don't see how that's different. They don't have a killer instinct, is what the thing is, but. I said this at the beginning of the season, and I kind of sticking with it now. If it's going to happen for the Washington Capitals, I have the feeling if this is going to have to be the year. You know, they have a lot of good players in the pipeline right now, but they're playing such solid hockey. You know.
Well, this is going to be the last. Well, one of the last years they get anything resembling productivity from Brooks Orpik. I mean, moving forward, they're Trotz is not going anywhere. They're still going to get OV, you know, producing and. Holtby's working with Mitch Korn. He's had a great year. There's no reason to doubt that that won't continue. And you mentioned, you know, their pipeline, whether it's a guy like Evgeny Kuznetsov, who's developing into, you know, quite the scorer for them and you know, moving into a primary scoring role too. Andrei Burakovsky, the big forward from Sweden, you know, they've got guys in the pipeline. So I don't think that this is sort of it for them, but I don't know, man. It does feel different. It feels like a Capitals team that can do it. A lot of it is Braden Holtby, and you know, I'd flip a coin for that game seven there. But I did select Washington to come out of the East just because this is such a weird season. I don't have any faith in any of the picks I've made. You could convince me easily that every single selection I made was wrong. Like, you could make a very stiff argument the other way. And that's not to be expected. I mean, that's to be expected when you have the league. What was it? The record for the fewest point differential between 16 and 1 this season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be expected. But it's been great. Right now, as we're laying down this episode, Minnesota it has a 2-goal lead on the St. Louis Blues with about 4 minutes left in that game. So it looks like Minnesota will advance to play the Chicago Blackhawks in the second round for the second consecutive season. But out west, it's a different series that has your eye as a potential sleeper.
I do. And I will say this, you know, Anaheim and Calgary will be meeting each other in the second round as of last night, with the Flames dispatching the Vancouver Canucks 7-2 or 7-4 rather. You know, man, I, you know, we said this off the air, but I really think Calgary is the team that will come out of the Pacific and face either Minnesota or Chicago in the Western Conference Final. If they get past that, that's a totally different story. I'm not sure about that. But Anaheim just has this sort of feeling that they might pull a classic Bruce Boudreaux coach team and choke. Because, I mean, they looked outright dominant against Winnipeg, right? I mean, Winnipeg was pretty outmatched to begin with, but Calgary's got a different vibe.
They when it, that series should still be going on. That should have been 2-2 after four, the Anaheim-Winnipeg series, because of how often they had to come back. I mean, Winnipeg couldn't get a save. Anaheim couldn't get a save. It was really entertaining hockey, but it definitely, I'll agree with you, it felt like the winner of that was going to have trouble against the winner of Vancouver-Calgary. Now, Calgary has been just abjectly god-awful in terms of shot metrics these playoffs. Vancouver, it looked like they outcoached them. It really did. Calgary found the way to win, and now they're going up against Jonas Hiller. Jonas Hiller's got him up against Anaheim, and Anaheim's not really getting the saves they need from Freddie Anderson. And I don't know. You're picking Calgary. I can see it, but doesn't it just feel like the Central has the West this year?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm not refuting that, and I could see it being Chicago again easily. I mean Chicago just is on a mission this year, and I'll say that Nashville Chicago series was so entertaining.
And Corey Crawford will come back. He's not. Everyone loves to freak out about him, and he's not. He's not going to continue this. He's not going to put together another Conn Smythe run, I don't think. But he'll come back. Everybody, calm down. Scott Darling's a decent enough backup, but he'll come back.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, whoever is coming out of the East is going to have a hard time getting past a team like Chicago if that's what it ends up being. That said, as far as talking about shot metrics, man, don't you feel like that goes a bit out the window? I'm not saying it's something that could completely be disregarded.
Only because
sample
in
size.
The playoffs, you have such a smaller sample size. It's not as predictive in the playoffs, but it still is representative of how often you have the puck. And, you know, if you look back, let me see if I can find this actually. If you look back at the 2008 run from the Detroit Red Wings, obviously then being the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference for the Detroit Red Wings, if you look at the percentage of shots for they had, this is shots for, not shot attempts for, it was just ridiculous. Hang on, you tap dance for a little bit while I try to find. Oh, here we go. No, never mind. Cease tap dancing. Cup run 2007 to 2008, shots against slash four. So this is not attempts. This is just total shots. They had 63.8% of shots in the Nashville series, 61.9% of shots in the Colorado series, 58.5% of shots in the Dallas Western Conference final series, and then trumping the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Cup, 64.6% of the shots were in the Detroit Red Wings' favor. So, yeah, you can still put together a remarkable run when you have the puck a lot. I'll give you that it's not everything in the playoffs because all you need is four games to lose and then you're done. But I'm still going to pick against a team like Calgary for the playoffs.
All right. Fair enough.
Because it is the Central. Whether it's Minnesota or Chicago, I don't know. But they're coming out of the West. I think that's too evident right now.
All right, I can buy right. that. But that but said, weird. Some weird kind of sound thing. I don't know, man. I'm just not totally sold on that idea. Just because you just never know. I mean, if Chicago's a team to come out of the West, I could totally buy it. But I don't know. I mean, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Let's do this. Before we get to our guest, and not to bury the lead here, but we do have Ross Mowerman, captain of the Providence Friars, the NCAA champions, on today's program. 2 weeks after he won it all, so enough time to sort of dry out for him. He'll be on the show later, but before we get to Ross, what about Craig Anderson? What about the Ottawa Senators, James? Can they keep riding hot goaltending, you know, into the Hamburg area, but can Anderson and the Senators become the second team in back-to-back years to come back from 0-3?
Ooh, man. I would love to see it, but I don't know. I think
listening, you already know the answer.
Yeah.
You already know the answer if they've 4-7, because that game is tonight.
Yeah, I know. Well, as we're sitting here right now before that game, I don't know, man. I think Montreal's got to close it out. I just think there's just too much experience in there. And I guess it's a matter of how much, you know, we could go against the previous thing I just said, because that completely undermines my argument about Calgary. But I don't know, man. Being down 3-0 is different than being down, you know, like, or being up 3-1 for, or 3-2 rather, for Calgary. I mean, Calgary took the lead. I mean, Ottawa's bouncing back from being down 3-0. Winning four in a row is a tall order for anybody, and Craig Anderson's going to crack at some point. I mean,
well, and yeah, I'll agree with you. And here's why I think Montreal's going to win. And I think they win tonight. Does Carey Price ever fart twice in a row? Like, he had the crap game in game, let's see, it would have been 5, where he got yanked on Friday night. What are the odds that he puts together 2 muffins? Like, back-to-back, I don't see it. Coming into the series, I said Montreal was going to win, even though their skaters were worse, because Carey Price cannot be beaten by an Ottawa Senators team 4 out of 7 times.
I buy that.
Brady Holtby might beat him 4 out of 7 times. Peter Mrazek might beat him 4 out of 7 times, but it's not going to be the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, I could buy that. I don't know if they'll win it tonight, but I see Montreal coming out of this simply because Price will shut the door. Their defense will close up and seal up any chances Ottawa has. Their big thing is they just got to stay out of the box because Ottawa has a pretty strong power play at this point. You can't give Erik Karlsson and Bobby Ryan and all those guys chances to get hot.
How good has Karlsson been this series?
Oh, my God. The guy's been otherworldly. I mean,
what a treat.
Yeah. Two of the world's greatest defensemen.
It was such a disappointment that we couldn't get Shea Weber versus Duncan Keith in that series. We did get Ryan Suter versus Alex Pietrangelo in the other Central series. But this one, this Subban and Karlsson, and I know it's all defensemen that I'm doing right now. It's not to exclude forwards or goaltenders, but I just, you know, when you have these Norris guys going up against each other, it's so fun to watch. And Subban and Karlsson, I can't wait until we get the chip in pucks so that we can tell, like, what percentage of time elapsed with a puck on a certain player's stick. Because if you could measure it, I bet the puck is on Subban's or Karlsson's stick close to 30% of this series.
You're probably right.
That is 30% of the time that it is on someone's stick, not floating around in the middle of a pass or, you know, ribbing around behind the boards. Like, they're trading rushes, and it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Wide open kind of gameplay. I'll tell you what, though. You know, you might want to segue into our guest here, speaking of wide open tournaments. We'll get to Ross Mowerman, yeah?
Yeah, so Ross Mowerman, he's from Janesville, Wisconsin, and we were able to get him that way. Captained the Providence Friars to a, I don't want to disrespect them by saying an unlikely run, but a very surprising championship run 2 weeks ago for the Frozen Four. Joining us on the program, Ross Mowerman coming up. Joining us this week on the Canes Weekly Podcast, captain of the Providence Friars, Ross Mowerman. Ross, how you doing today?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Sauce. So, first of all, you know, it's been 2 weeks, but, I mean, what have these weeks been like for you guys? You and your head coach, Nate Lehman, got to throw out the first pitch at a Red Sox game sometime last week as part of the celebration that followed this championship win. Was that the peak of the celebration? I mean, describe these last 2 weeks for you guys.
No, it's been crazy for sure. You know, the moments after winning it was unbelievable, just kind of all the work you put in. And finally achieve something like we did. It's still taking some time to set in, but the last couple weeks have been awesome, just kind of taking it all in. The Red Sox game was pretty cool. I think the biggest thing for us, that was fun coming back to the rink and kind of having the trophy and having people come down and take pictures with it and kind of just hang out with everyone that's kind of been along for the ride with us. So that was probably the coolest part. But everything has been awesome, and it's been an unbelievable experience for sure.
Now, I'll ask Ross, you know, kind of one of the things I've always noticed about college hockey is, you know, it's such an unpredictable field when it comes to the tournament. I mean, did you guys ever feel like, you know, coming in that you were sort of underestimated or, you know, like you had something to prove coming into the tournament?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just everyone kind of doubted us, I think, at that point. You know, we were one of the last teams in. But we kind of liked that kind of underdog mentality that, you know, only guys that really matter are the guys in the locker room and believing in each other. And I think that really, after losing our Hockey East tournament game, I think kind of re-energized us to get back after, and we got a second chance. And I mean, in the NCAA tournament, all those teams that make it are pretty good, and there's even teams that don't make it that could be right there and win it all too. So it takes a full season's work ethic and an approach every day and bringing it to, and we're fortunate to make it in. And then just took it one game at a time and made the most of our opportunity.
Well, and what a season it was. I mean, there are roller coaster years every season for some teams, you know. But, I mean, this one, you have the big win streak through December, January, a bit of a rut. And then you mentioned the heartbreaker to New Hampshire, where at the time it looked like it might have potentially jeopardized your tournament hopes. You put together a remarkable four-game run for the ship. You know, Gillies was outstanding all season, but you also didn't have any trouble scoring goals throughout the four games. Was there ever a point, Ross, where you all just knew that it was yours to win?
Well, I mean, early on in the season, you know, there was some high expectations from not only ourselves, but media and everyone around us to do well, because we came up just short of the Frozen Four the year before. So we all knew we had a team that could do it. Early on, we played some tough teams, came up short, and we were kind of struggling to find our identity scoring and stuff. And kind of, like I said, hit our stride there towards December. And then in the second half, kind of still played pretty good hockey, but lost a few games that kind of hurt us. Kind of put us in the bubble, especially that UNH series. Losing that was tough, because it was out of your hands at that point. You know, you kind of just wait and see what happens. And but once we got in the tournament, we knew that we played our style of hockey, that we could compete with anyone. And we saw, I mean, the first game against Miami, playing against Connor, another Jet. We had a good, great second period. Then the third period, when they pulled the goalie, about 12 minutes left, you know, it was a little tough, but we hung on there. But each game was a battle. We knew that coming in, and just everyone believed in each other, and that was the biggest thing.
Now, Ross, I'll say, you know, I've never really actually been to Providence or anything like that. So can you just kind of give us an idea? I mean, does you feel like this run really helped put hockey even more on the map than it was up around Providence for you guys?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, I didn't know much about the school coming out here. It's a small school. There's a lot of other schools in the area with some big tradition like BC and BU. But there is some proud tradition here in the past with Lou Lamarillo and you know, Chris Treary and guys like that have done really well. And so it's just cool to be able to carry that on and to win the first. This is the first men's national championship here at this school, so that's pretty cool for us just to be part of that group. And you know, they can never take that away from us, so that's pretty awesome. But they've really put a lot of money into the program the last couple of years, not only hockey but other sports. Our soccer team made it to the Final Four this year too, so. It's just a really exciting time to be part of the Providence College Friars, and I know we have a great alum supporting us. That really makes it pretty great to be part of, for sure.
It's a great time to be part of college hockey in general. You know, we're in this kind of dawn of a new age in the NHL, a new age of development. You know, not that Canadian Major Junior is going anywhere, but overall the percentage of guys in the NHL that are coming from Major Junior is dropping. And the development line of U.S. junior to college to NHL is getting more and more popular, and it's getting more and more respect, not just from coaches in the NHL level, but from media as well. You know, you got guys like Johnny Gaudreau that come from USA junior to college to the NHL, really bringing a lot of spotlight on that. What do you see as kind of the future here? I mean, we have Austin Matthews might go college next year. Jack Eichel, obviously, you know, he beat Jack, but, you know, a lot of top NHL picks are going to be coming from the college ranks that played in the United States system. I mean, is this something that you're excited about? Is this something that you guys talk about as a group? What do you see as the future of this development line that you're going to hope to join?
Yeah, it's neat. I mean, just to be part of, and definitely in just the few years that I've been part of it, I've seen it, you know, it evolve. I mean, with the North American League, I didn't know much about that. You know, after high school, I kind of started learning things about it, and all of a sudden they bring the Jets to town, and I was fortunate to be part of that team for 2 years. And I think that really gives guys an opportunity to develop and mature physically and mentally, and I think that helps at the next level. Each level you go up, you know, it's more mental for sure. So I think with having those teams in place and with guys doing well, like you mentioned, Johnny Gaudreau, who's tearing up in the NHL, you know, he's done it at every step. So I think when guys like that do really well, I think it opens more doors for other guys to get the opportunity. I know that a lot of guys that that I've played with in the last couple of years that have played in college are now playing professional hockey, which is pretty cool. I think just with guys doing well at that level, the next, you know, the pro level, more guys get a chance at the college level, and it kind of trickles down from there.
Well, Ross, I'll speaking of talking about pro level here, what's the plan for you after college, man? I mean, I probably shouldn't be asking that question because everybody's asked me that question and I can't answer it myself. But I mean, you know, what's the end goal here? What are you looking at trying to do?
I'm not sure. You know, just kind of taking this in right now. My teammates here, we got 2 weeks left of school and then go from there. Contact with my advisor. Weekly and kind of just kind of wait and see at this point. Hopefully get an invite or a contract here this summer or something. But I'm just looking forward to the opportunity. I want to keep playing, and I feel like I've done well enough to be given the chance. So just kind of excited to be part of this program right now and kind of finish up school here and then go from there.
I mean, we all here at the Jets have no doubt that you're going to be playing some very important hockey games in the next couple of years, potentially being the first former Jet in the NHL. I mean, you mentioned that you got to face Connor Lemoran from Miami. We do have a few guys, you know, in pretty big time college right now, whether it's Jason Ford and Alex Tkachuk up at Wisconsin, or, you know, Austin Preeb and Jordan Himley at Air Force. And I mean, this year's squad is sending a ton. Have you gotten a chance to watch any of the Jets this season? And before he answers this, listeners, for those of you who don't know, if you haven't listened in a while, I do work for the Janesville Jets. We're a small junior program, and Ross is from here in Janesville. He played 2 years for the Janesville Jets of the North American Hockey League. So, Ross, have you gotten a chance to see any of this remarkable run the Jets have put on this year?
No, I haven't. I mean, I've been following kind of online. Just seems like just a great team, great group of guys. It sounds like that all playing for one another, and that's pretty cool. I talked with some people from town, and they said that they're just really fun to watch, and hopefully people are coming down to watch and support. Now they had another big weekend this past weekend, and hopefully they can continue. I'm playing good hockey, but sounds like they just have a complete team, and it's really exciting. I think for me personally, coming from Janesville, growing up. You said you're from Janesville, Wisconsin. Not many people knew that or knew where it was. I think with the junior program there now, a lot of people in the hockey community know where that's at. So that's pretty cool for me when I'm out of town. So just really exciting to be part of, like I said, the Jets and Providence College. And got the opportunity to play against Larkin Jacobson, one of my teammates. He was at Denver for 4 years. So it's pretty cool to see guys progress, the guys that have moved on and play at the next level. So kind of cool to be a part of that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They're putting together something remarkable this season. Just beat up on the Sioux Eagles this past weekend to get a 2-0 lead in the North Division Finals. And Ross's dad is also the high school coach here. John Mauerman coaches the Janesville and the Bluebirds, the conjoined team between the two high schools here in town. And they went to state. So Janesville's getting a little bit on the Wisconsin map for hockey. And, you know, they've got home ice advantage, the Jets do, throughout the NAHL playoffs. So assuming they get past the Sioux, then that's the last bus trip they have to take. So we could have a junior hockey championship here in Wisconsin, here in Janesville, Wisconsin. And that would be a remarkable stride for not just the state of Wisconsin hockey, but the city of Janesville as well. And he's Ross Mauer. I mean, he's from Janesville. He captained the Providence Friars to a national championship. Congratulations, Ross, again. And thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. And good luck the rest of the season. Hopefully they can bring it home and wrap
this up. Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Ross.
Yeah, good luck on finals, Ross.
Thank you. Thanks.
Mauerman's a good guy, eh, James? Like, what a good fucking interview.
Yeah, that's the thing that it dawned on me when I said good luck on exams, and it clicked. I was like, oh wait, that dude is my age. That dude is my age.
And he's a 90.
Oh shit, no shit. Like,
he's,
really?
He's October 1990. Yeah.
Wow.
He's a 90 because, well, he played he played his couple years as a junior and went to his first year. I think his 20-year-old season, which is not abnormal in any way. For American junior, I mean, a lot of our guys are 94s, are 95s. They're not quite ready for college hockey, even. So, yeah, you know, that typically happens.
Yeah, but that's still alarming. I was just like, oh man, like He's things are in his life kind of like what they are in mine. He just has less schoolwork than I do.
Yeah, he's a good guy though. I mean, he was a good interview. It was was not pulling teeth at any means. He was a really good guy. So Ross Mowerman, again, thanks to him for coming on the show.
Yeah,
and he'll look to be an undrafted, obviously, NHL player. But his teammate John Gillies was drafted by the Calgary Flames and just signed a contract with them. But speaking of the draft, since our last show, we know Connor McDavid, the Oilers, yada yada yada. And spare me with your take on that. But Canes Weekly Podcast, we haven't even mentioned the team until this point. Yet fifth overall. Not too dissimilar from when you had Jeff Skinner or Elias Lindholm announced as your first round selection. And both of those guys, tremendous parts of this franchise. So in a ridiculous season for prospects, we're going to have another one. James, you asked me before we started laying this down, what do you do with the fifth overall pick? I said, it depends on who's available. And you said, well, if any of the top four fall, that's got to be your guy. And that surprised me a bit. Because I haven't really heard of it as a top four. I don't really think of it as top four. Obviously, I think of it as top two, and then like a secondary three or three. But you're laughing if you're Carolina, because you're going to have one of Hanifin, Strome, or Marner.
Well, here's kind of why. Here's my opinion. Before this lottery all unfolded, I assumed, you know, say Buffalo had gotten the first pick, yada, yada, yada. I was sure Hanifin is going three to Edmonton. I mean, they need defensive help badly. Obviously, you can't say no and not take Connor McDavid, this generational talent, and shift somebody off elsewhere to pick up defensive or goaltending help. You know, so the more I'm starting to think, is a very strong potential. I've always figured top four in this draft are obviously McDavid, Eichel, then Hanifin or Strome will go one or three or four. And then you have Mitch Marner and what is it, Kraus?
Yeah, Lawson Kraus, big boy for the Kingston Frontenacs.
He could drop.
But he was rising all season on scouting, on every scouting list, and people like him because of his size. Ever since Milan Lucic helped win the cup for the Bruins in 2011, everyone's been looking for the next Milan Lucic, and Lawson Kraus is just another freaking embodiment of this, and people are losing their proverbial shit over that. I get that you know this guy's got size and that's important, but I would not take him in the top five. I really wouldn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm a professional scout, so I know what I'm talking about, but it is a little frustrating to see some people forecasting him, and by people, I don't mean idiots on Twitter. I mean actual writers forecasting him over a guy like Mitch Marner.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, I just had the fleeting thought of, man, this is not a very physical team the Carolina Hurricanes have, and you'd be, you know, it'd definitely be something you'd think about they'd want to address. And that, you know, at number five in a draft like this, I wouldn't be okay with them taking a guy like Lawson Kraus. I mean, realistically, this team does probably need to get a little bit tougher and needs defensive help badly. I'll be shocked if Hanifin drops to five, but that's obviously the guy you want, right?
Hanifin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather have Strome. I'd probably go Strome, Hanifin, then Marner on my big board right now, if I'm Ron Francis. But here's what I like about Mitch Marner. He's not as small as people worry that he's going to be. He's listed at 5'10", 164, which that's not that much smaller than William Nylander was listed last season for last year's draft. And, you know, obviously Carolina went Hayden Fleury, but Willie Nylander would have been a fine pick for them too. And Mitch Marner, center for the London Knights, has in his draft year outperformed what Nazem Kadri did in his draft year, also as a center for the London Knights. Kadri points per games played in his draft year, 1.39. Marner's points per game, 2.0.
Whew.
His points per game high. His points per game is higher than Giroux's.
Jeez.
In his draft year. Like, Strom's a tremendous player, and he's got a bit more size to him, obviously, and I'm excited as a Leafs fan to see Dylan Strome, but Mitch Marner is a hell of a player. He'd be a first overall selection in a lot of drafts.
Yeah.
Like, I can't get upset if he's the pick. And that's why I think you're laughing, because if you don't get Marner, you get Stroman. If you don't get either of them, you get Hanifin.
Yeah, true. I mean, they're poised right now. They're in a good spot regardless. I mean, you know, when you try to evaluate the Carolina Hurricanes season and the way it came unraveled, you know, how much of it is injuries, how much of it is just poor play all around, and how much of this is gonna bounce back. I mean, the big glaring mark right now is obviously, okay, how is Ronnie Francis going to address defensive help, right? I mean, the underlying numbers, you know, say Carolina, the Hurricanes are a prime bounce back candidate next season, but they need to address a few things. So the system's good. They're just not putting pucks in the net, and they're not keeping them out of their own. You know, the former could be fixed by bounce back years from a few guys, but we've been banking on that for a while. And the latter's going to have to be addressed outside of the organization. You know, and it's going to be, I think, the big summer for Ron Francis to do his overhaul. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if a decision is made on Ward or Staal that, you know, we've been talking about for a full year now, James. I don't know if that kind of decision is made, but you can bank on the advancement of Hayden Fleury, I think. You can bank on the continued growth for a guy like Elias Lindholm, and you can bank on finally, we're done with Tim Gleason.
Oh my God.
The book is over. The back cover is closed and you can put it back on the bookshelf. We're done. And hopefully we're done with that kind of defenseman in Carolina.
Oh,
I'm not saying that we need 6 to 7 Morgan Rielly's or Chris Letang's, but I mean, geez, you've got to be able to move the puck in this league. And I trust that Ron Francis is smart enough to know that. So yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be a big summer for them. I'm excited to see what they do. I mean, obviously you can't spend too much money, but I'm excited to see what they do in free agents. There, I think, are some decent depth guys you can go pick up this year, especially on D. You know, I don't know if it's you might not be going someone like Francois Beauchemin or Cody Franson or Jeff Petrie, but what about a guy like Johnny Oduya coming out of Chicago?
Yeah.
They can't afford to pay him. He's only at 2.8 this year. If he gets a raise, it's at 3.5 or 4. You can afford that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about that. I mean, I think it all depends on their assessment of where their younger guys are at. Like, where do you think Murphy's at this point in his career? Where do you think Fleury's going to be with this team and in what role? I mean, that.
Where do I think Murphy's at this point in his career? I think he's in the dark room.
Oh, well, God damn, dude. Well, okay. That said, you know, but seriously, no, they really need to kind of figure that out. And I think that's the kind of thing that after, you know, this next month and change is probably going to be deliberating, okay, where are we at? What do we need to address the most? And not to mention, there's so much organizational upheaval throughout the league with teams like Toronto and Edmonton. And, you know, the market for some of those, the players in among the higher paid players, rather, I should say, for the Carolina Hurricanes may alter. I mean, I'll be very surprised if, you know, those four forwards of the Stalls, Skinner and Semenov, if all four are back next year. I mean, it's going to be hard to move those salaries, but I could see the market for them opening up in the offseason. Just as, you know, I mean, everybody says, the rumor to, you know, player X goes to Toronto is always going to be there. But you never know. I mean, it seems like that's going to be a market where there's going to be a ton of change. And if a stamp is wanted to be made, you never know.
I still hesitate. I don't know. I think Toronto's going slow with this one. I really do. But I will agree that Cam Ward to San Jose sounds really, really plausible.
What about Cam Ward to Edmonton?
That one too. Yep. That one too. Or Cam Ward to Dallas. Don't know where Jack Campbell is on his development or where they think he is. But he could be a good fit in any of those three Western markets. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think we're done with Winnipeg because I think Hutchinson's ready to take the reins there. But yeah, if you can convince one of those three teams to take $4 million, well,
yep.
There you go.
Yeah, seriously. But I don't know. I mean, it's going to be an interesting summer, and definitely, I mean, a lot of it's a lot. We're going to know what's probably going to happen by the time the draft rolls around. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. There are going to be some decisions made before the draft, I think. And if not before the draft, then at the draft. And speaking of which, if you've made it this far in the program, then you're probably one of these groups of people. So, you know, sorry for the inundation. But we're talking a little bit on Twitter, whether it's Patrick Clark, Section 328, going to the draft. But Patrick Clark, Jamie Kellner, a few other people, I think KP Kelly might have been one of them. But we were chatting on Twitter, a lot of us on Canes Twitter, talking about maybe doing a sort of Canes watch party, draft watch party. Section 328, you guys are going, so fuck you. But we're going to be maybe doing that, and I'll be back by then. So it'll be some fun times. We'll get to see it all unfold, hopefully all together.
Oh man, that'll be good. Well, because you know, I haven't even seen you since the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm stoked. I'm stoked to come back, but not without a ring. Holy cow, we've got a big chance here. Anyway, that about does it for me, James, on this edition. Anything you'd like to put else on this show?
Oh man, not especially. I think we hit everything we needed to hit, which is kind of amazing. It's getting to the point now in Canes land where there's not a lot to talk about, and it's gonna be back to the slow dog days of summer, I guess. Damn.
Thankfully, we have the playoffs to keep us into it. With exams for James and playoffs for me, we'll see if we can't get a few more episodes in, but it might be tough over these next couple weeks. But with the playoffs coming up, we'll have plenty to talk about. Thanks to Ross Mauerman again for coming on the show, and thank you all for listening to another edition of the Canes Weekly Podcast.